We're hoping on page Mem Beis in Shabbos, Ois Samach Beis. Continuing on the topic of Matan Torah, the Gemara says, "V'amar Rabbi Yishur ben Levi, v'shar sheyorad Moshe lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu." When Hashem came down from before, when Moshe came down from before Hashem, so he received the Torah, he's now bringing it down to earth. Bas Satan v'amar lefonav, so the Satan comes along and asks Hashem, "Ribbono shel Olam, Torah heichan hi? Where is the Torah?" I'm wondering, where is the Torah? How did he not know that Matan Torah had just happened? So Tosfos explains that actually brings from a Medrash that actually Hashem distracted the Satan and got him out of the picture so that he shouldn't be mekatrig. You don't want him to accuse at the time of Matan Torah, saying that he being a Malach, he knows what's going to happen, that what are you giving them the Torah when 40 days from now they're going to end up making an eagle? So therefore Hashem didn't want that. So therefore he got the Satan out of the way while the Torah was being given. So now Tosfos is saying, literally, he didn't know that it had happened. And in fact, Tosfos refers to a Gemara that also mentions a similar point that says that the Torah was nitna b'chashai, the Torah was given in secret because of the Satan. Now, what do you mean in secret? I mean, the whole world heard it, but it means, in other words, that Hashem prevented the Satan from knowing about it. On the other hand, there are many different other explanations. Marsha explains that the Satan is focusing on the secrets of Torah. In fact, Marsha says, look, we just said before in the previous piece of Gemara that when Moshe, after Moshe refuted the argument of the Malachim, where they were saying, Tnohod Chal HaShemayim, keep your glory of the Torah in Shemayim, don't give it on here on earth, and Moshe successfully refuted them and showed that the Torah belongs here on earth. So he says, we said that each Malach gave him something, and even the Malach HaMavis gave him a present, told him how to use Torahs to stop Nagefa, and the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra, who Satan, who Yetzahoru, who Malach HaMavis. So it's the same Malach who wears three different hats. So what do you mean he didn't know what happened? So Marsha therefore says that what we mean is, he wants to argue about the fact that the hidden aspects of the Torah, the pnimius of Torah, was given down here on earth. He's saying, okay, I can understand the chitzonius of Torah, the practical mitzvahs, fine. Moshe successfully made the point that those are needed on earth, but why should the secrets of Torah, which are more himmeldick, why do those belong on earth? So therefore he's saying, what is it, where is it? Like, what is it doing on earth? In other words, in effect, Marsha explains, he's asking, like, can the world even contain that aspect of Torah? Is the world b'chlal big enough for it? Then the Rif gives another explanation that we're talking about, particularly after Moshe broke the Luchos. So now the Satan has room to be mekatrig. What's the Torah doing on earth when you see that they couldn't even hold on to it, and then the Luchos had to be broken? So there's more. Ion Yaakov says that maybe he thought that Moshe himself would stay up Lamaila with the Torah. Okay, Moshe's going to receive the Torah, but maybe he'll stay in Shemayim with it rather than go back down to earth. And he's disappointed to find out that not. And the Chassam Sofer says something similar, that he thought the Torah will be both in heaven and the earth. And now all of a sudden he finds out Torah lover Shemayim. So many different understandings of what exactly the Satan's problem is. Anyway, Omele, Hashem says to the Satan, is Hatiya La'aretz. Page Membeis. Yes.
How far down
yet? So Omalei, yeah, a few lines down. Nasati al Oretz. So Hashem tells the Satan, I gave it down to the earth. Holach Eitzal Eretz. So the Satan went to the earth to find out where exactly it is, and he's going to speak to the earth. Marsha says we don't necessarily mean that he's talking to the earth itself. The earth itself is inanimate; he can't speak to it. It means he's talking to a Malach, who in charge of the earth, the same way as you have Malachim in charge of all the Nivraim, so you have a Malach that mediates Hashem's Hashpah to the earth, so he's going to talk to it. So, Omer la Torah heichan hi, so he asks the earth, or the Malach of the earth, where is the Torah? Omer le, so the earth answers him in the words of the Pasuk, Elikim heven darka v'gaymer, Hashem understands its way, and the Pasuk continues, v'hu yadras v'gaymer, he knows the place for it. In other words, in effect, following, for example, Marsha, that the Satan is saying, how could the world fit the Torah, especially the Pnimius HaTorah? So the earth is saying, Hashem knows what place can fit it. I myself don't know. And then according to each of the other explanations, that, for example, according to the Rif that we're talking about, that it's after the Luchos were broken. So the Malach of the earth says, that's true, the Luchos were broken. On the other hand, the letters flew back up to Shemayim, so Hashem knows where they are right now. I don't know. Anyway, Holachet so young. So the Satan went to the sea, the Amalei, and the sea answered him, Ein Imadi. It's not with me. This is also a quotation from the pasuk in Iyov over there. You have a perek in Iyov, perek Chavches, where Iyov is giving a speech. One of his speeches talks about the greatness of Chachma, how nobody can find, and Chachma means particularly the Chachma of Torah, how nobody can discover where it is. And he has this pasuk he mentions over there in the pasuk, the Yom Omer in Imadi, the sea says it's not with me. So again, the sea is saying it does it. So even though, in other words, the sea is larger than the habitable earth, nevertheless, even the sea can't fit the Torah. But so it says it's not in me. I don't know where it is. So the Sutton goes to the depths. And the depth says, Ein bi, it's not in me. Shenema, as in fact the pasuk says, Tahoim omer loy bihi, the depths say that Chochma is not in me, the Yom omer ein imadi, and the sea says it's not with me. And then, he went to Avadon and Mavis, which are various names for Gehenna. And the pasuk continues, Avadon v'Mavis Amru, Avadon, which means being lost, destruction, and Mavis, Avadon is more than destruction, it's like non-entity, like nullity, which the Maharal in particular explains in a lot of places that that's what Gehenna is. It's like the ultimate nullity, the ultimate nothingness, and that's where when a neshama ends up there, then it knows it's in trouble. So that's v'mavis, death. Amru, they said, ba'oznenu shamanu shima, with our ears, we've heard about it. In other words, we've heard the Torah was given, but we don't know exactly where it is. So Marsha explains, the vote is, again, he went to the sea, which is larger than the earth, which is larger than the habitable earth, and it said, it's not in me, there's no room for the Torah in me either, the Torah is vaster than the sea, as in fact, you have a different pasuk in Iyov that says, Arucha me'eretz midor rechava min Iyom, the Torah is wider than the earth, and is longer than the earth, and wider than the sea. So he goes to Gehenna. He goes to Tahoim, which is even the Tahoim, which is larger, can't fit it. And he goes to Avadon and Mavis, which is the Malach in charge of Gehenna. And Gehenna, the Gemara tells us in Pesachim, is thousands of times larger than the earth. The Gemara's expression over there is that the whole world is 1/60th the size of the Gan, which in turn is 1/60th the size of Eden. You have Gan Eden Atachton, Gan Eden Elyon, which in turn is 1/60th the size of Gehenna. So the earth is like a tiny little thing compared to Gehenna. So he thinks maybe Gehenna can fit the Torah. And even Gehenna says, no, we only heard about it with our ears that the Torah was given because the sound of Hashem's voice went misofa olam ad sofa from one end of the world to the other. So we heard about it, but we don't know where it is. So the Sutton comes back to Hashem and says, I've looked for it in the entire world and I can't find it. In other words, again, there's no place in the entire Gashmiistic world that can hold the Torah, for the Torah, and especially like Marashah said, Pnimiyas HaTorah is too great for the world. Amalei, so Hashem tells the Sutton, Leich Etzel Ben Amram, go talk to Ben Amram and you'll find out. Now, it's interesting. Usually when Moshe is called Ben Amram, it's often meant as a derogatory thing. The Jewish people sometimes call him Ben Amram to make fun of him. Why is Hashem calling him Ben Amram? Marashah says the vote is that we know that Amram was one of the few people in history who didn't die because of any Aveda of his own, only because of the Chet Tadas, only because of the Chet Tadas it was decreed that all human beings eventually have to die. So therefore, Hashem calls Moshe, at this point, Ben Amram, to hint it's with a person who has some of the quality of his father Amram of being beyond the reach of the Sutton, of you, the Malach HaMavis, who is also known as the Sutton. But he didn't get the hint, Halachetzo Moshe. So he went to Moshe. So therefore, he doesn't say Halachetzo Ben Amram. In other words, he didn't get Hashem's hint. He thought of Moshe as just another person. And where's the Torah that Hashem gave you? So Moshe answers, who am I that Hashem would give me the Torah? In other words, in a certain sense, as if like Moshe is agreeing to the Sutton, it's true, the secrets of the Torah weren't really given to me, only the nigla of Torah. The secrets of Torah are much too vast for any human being, even me, to grasp. Moshe, badayata, when Moshe, are you telling an untruth? The fact is, you were given the whole Torah, Nigla and Nister. In fact, that's what Marsha refers to before we had in the Gemara. When Moshe was debating with the Malachim, Hashem told him to hold on to the Kisei HaKavod, representing that a human being has the ability to be on earth and yet at the same time touching the Kisei HaKavod, representing, in other words, that a person has the ability to absorb not only the Nigla of Torah, but also the Nister. So what are you telling the Sutton that it wasn't given to you? But Moshe says, Ribbono shel Olam, chem de gnuza yesh lecha. You have this precious treasure, the Torah, shata mishtasheya b'v'chol yoyim. You play with it and you enjoy yourself with it every day. There's psukim in Mishlei that describe the pasuk says over there, masacheches lefana b'chol eis. The Torah is, so to speak, playing and sporting around in front of Hashem always. So this is your precious treasure and your precious plaything. Should I take credit for myself that I received that? Again, meaning especially the secrets of the Torah. It's true, Moshe is saying, our show explains, that it's true. Me being a human being, I never could have possibly received that, except that you gave me, you put over me some of the glory of your Shechina when I held on to the Kisat Kavod, and you made it possible for me to get it. But you're right, the Sutton has a point that without that, I never would have been able to receive such a thing, because it's true, it's beyond anything that any human being can possibly absorb. Well, since you have humbled yourself, since you've made yourself small and said that you're not really worthy of it, therefore the Torah will be named after you. It'll be called, as the last of the Nevi'im says, remember the Torah of Moshe, my servant. So it's called Moshe's Torah in tribute to the fact that Moshe didn't take the credit for himself, that it was given to him. He credited it all to Hashem. Then it would may not have been called Teras Moshe, yeah. And the vote is also, I mean, one of the points in all of this is that the Sutton is like going he's going like lower and lower. First he's starting with the earth, then the sea, which is lower than the earth, then the Tahoim, and so on and so forth, until so now he finally reaches Moshe, and Moshe shows that he's humble, he's honor of Mikol Adam. So in a sense, like he acts as though he's lower than all of the above. So Hashem is saying, therefore, so you deserve more than all of those other things to have the Torah named after you. Continues the Gemara. V'amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, v'shar she'ola Moshe mamorim, when Moshe went up to Shemayim, motzev HaKadosh Baruch Hu shoyo kosher ksorim la'osias. He found that Hashem was tying crowns onto the letters. These are the tagim on the letters. There's some places in Chassidus where it talks about that it also refers to the trup on the words. So both of those are like a crown, although like crowns that are above the letters and higher than. So Moshe sees Hashem doing it, and he doesn't react. So Hashem tells him, Moshe, ain shalom b'ircha. Don't they say shalom where you come from? In other words, you should be saying shalom aleichem to me. In fact, Tosfos, not printed here, it's in the Gemara. Actually, it's not here at all. Actually, it's a completely different Gemara. Tosfos is bothered by the question. So what are we saying? That Hashem is expecting that Moshe, the Talmud, should be initiating Shalom to him? Don't we find in other places that the Gemara says it's not really respectful for a Talmud to initiate Shalom to his Rebbe? And so the answer is there's a difference between different kinds of Shalom. There's asking about somebody's Shalom, as in, how are you doing? That's respectful for a Talmud to do to his Rebbe, obviously not in a way like how you're doing like to a Chaver, but in a more respectful, refined way. And then there's Shalom, like when you say Shalom Aleichem to an equal, that you don't do to your Rebbe. That your Rebbe initiates and you reply with Shalom Alecha Rebbe Umori. So Hashem is saying to Moshe, so to speak, you should be asking after my welfare. That would be the Derech Eretz thing to do. But Moshe says, where do you ever find an Eved gives Shalom to his master? It's not respectful. I'm your Eved, so what are you expecting that I should give you Shalom?
So he asks
him,
you are
telling me
to tell him I'm Eved.
Yeah. Hashem tells him, nevertheless, you should have helped me out. Now, what it's actually this explanation about this point about the two different kinds of Shalom. This is in Marsha, he says. So what do we mean? So hoy v'chol azreini. So Rashi refers to the fact that so Rashi explains, you should have told me, titzlach malachtecha, your work should be successful. Now, how do you say that to Hashem? What do you mean that Hashem should be successful? So Marsha explains that, in fact, we know that tzaddikim, when they speak, when they speak appropriately, they give koyach to Pamal Yishamayla, to the whole host in Shemayim, and so to speak, to Hashem himself. In Chassidus, it talks about in a number of places the idea that, in particular, the Pasuk the Gemara is going to bring over here, V'ata Yugnach Koyach Adnai, that Adnai represents Malchus, and it receives from the higher spheres, And you have also talks about the idea of bringing soviv into, you know, bringing soviv into mamale. You know, you have the subject in these days, Tanya, talking about mamale kolamin versus soviv kolamin, soviv being a much higher level of gilui of the course. So bringing soviv into mamale is a tremendous thing. It means that there's a much more powerful gilui of the course down here. And so Hashem is saying to Moshe, you should be helping out, you should be making it possible for that hamshacha to happen, and that way you'll strengthen the knowledge of Elikus in the world. Miyad omale, so right away, meaning actually the next time, Rashi says, the next time that Moshe has the opportunity, he does. He says, after the story with the Meraglim, v'ata yignam l'koyach Hashem kasher dibarta. Now let the power of Hashem be strong as you spoke. So he's referring back to now by Matan Torah, you spoke to me and told me that hayo l'chola azreini. So now I'm doing exactly that. So therefore, in other words, kasher amarta, as you told me to say exactly that. Now, so Rashi explains that we don't mean he said it right away. The fact is the story of the Meraglim happened over a year after Matan Torah. So it means the next opportunity that Moshe had to use that, he used that. On the other hand, Marashal says that no, it is the Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had a Kabbalah, that this is one of those answers, this is one of those cases of Ein Muktamum Ocha BaTorah, that the Torah is saying things out of chronological order. And in fact, he said that Pasuk, Ba'ata Yignan L'Koyach Hashem, right then and there when he's watching Hashem putting the Ksarim on the Osius. You have also, of course, here you have the story in Menachos. Another part of that story we see is Hashem putting the Ksarim on the letters, and he asks him what's the purpose of them, and Hashem tells him that Rabbi Akiva is eventually going to douse in tons of halachas from those crowns, and so on and so forth. You have the whole story in detail over there. So again, there's the idea, the crowns in particular represent a higher level of a higher level in Torah. And therefore, when we're saying Hashem is tying them onto the letters, it means, in other words, that there's a greater, there's a deeper gilui of the course being brought down in through that. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Amrei b'shrav ben Levi, my dichtiv vayar ha'om ki boishesh Moshe. The people saw that Moshe was late, and therefore they got nervous and they asked Aaron to make the eved. So what's the word boishesh? Now the simple meaning of boishesh means that he was late. You have a few other places in Tanakh where it uses the word boishesh. Marashah says the vote is that why all of a sudden on that day are they more nervous than every other day? Why all of a sudden on that day, which was Tezayin Tammuz, are they all of a sudden nervous that Moshe is late? He's already been away for weeks. So therefore, the Gemara finds reason to douse in the word. Eitz Yosef says another point. You might have said instead the word ichur. So why boshesh? It means al tikun boshesh ela boushesh. So don't read it boshesh that he was late, but boushesh 6 hours have come. Because b'shasha ala Moshe l'morim, when Moshe went up on high to receive the Torah, omel lahem l'Yisrael l'sayf aboyim yem b'tchilas sheish ani ba. After 40 days, I will come back at the beginning of the sixth hour. Counting the hours from Netzach Hamah, so the sixth hour, according to the Magen Avraham, from Alos HaShachar, whatever. The point is that the beginning of the sixth hour will be shortly before Chatzos. But they miscalculated when, so Rashi explains, they miscalculated when the 40 days begin. They thought that the day Moshe went up to Har Sinai is the first of the 40 days. But actually, what Moshe meant was it has to be 40 days, each one beginning from the night before. So Rashi calculates Moshe went up to Har Sinai on the 7th of Sivan, and that, by the way, would be according to everybody, even though we discussed before, we had the Machlokas Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim, whether the Torah was given on the 6th of Sivan or on the 7th, but everybody agrees that Moshe goes up only on the 7th, because at the beginning of the Sugya, we brought a Pasuk that says that the cloud covered him or it for 6 days, and on the 7th day Hashem called to him. So according to Rabbi Yossi, it means that the Torah was given on the 7th, and Moshe was told on that same day to come up to Har Sinai to receive the rest of the Torah. And according to the Chachamim, we understand that it means that after Matan Torah, which took place on the 6th, the next day Moshe was told to come into the cloud. He was in there for 6 days being cleansed, and then on the 7th day, which would be Yud Gimel Sivan, then Hashem invited him in and started teaching him the Torah. So either way, Moshe was invited to come up into the mountain for the 40 days, beginning on the 7th of Sivan. So they figured you have 24 days of Sivan and 16 days of Tammuz. That gives you 40. So therefore, on Tezayin Tammuz would be the 40th day. They didn't realize that it's supposed to begin from the next day, because you have to have 40 complete days, including the nights. Tosfos doesn't really like that. The Rivam in Tosfos doesn't like that explanation and points out various other Gemaras and various other considerations to say that it's not so. So Tosfos doesn't explain exactly how they reconstruct the events, but somehow, in other words, again, that Moshe wasn't there in time, and therefore they got nervous. So the sofa boimia and bas sotin ve'ibris olam at the end of 40 days. Meaning, according to Rashi, that they thought that it was the 40th day, and really it wasn't. It was only the 39th day. So on that day, Bas Satan ve'ir v'sa'olam, the Satan came and confused the world and showed them this darkness, dark clouds, and everything, as if like everybody is in mourning because Moshe has passed away. And Amalahem, he says to the Jewish people, Moshe Rabchem Heichanu, where is Moshe, your leader? Amalai Olal Amonim. They said he went up to Shemayim to receive the Torah. Amalahem, Bo'ushesh. So he said, look, the sixth hour has already come. He said he was going to be back by now. But V'leishkichu'olav, they didn't pay attention to him. Maybe because Takta, they were thinking maybe we miscalculated the days, maybe not. Then the Sutton tries to tell them Moshe is dead, but still V'leishkichu'olav, and they still didn't pay attention. So then Sutton showed them an image of Moshe's bier, of the bed that he's lying on. And now all of a sudden they believed what they were seeing, and they thought that Moshe really is dead. That explains the expression they used to Aaron, he's Zeh Moshe Ishvagem, this man Moshe. And we know whenever it says Zeh means something you can point to. So they're able to point to this image that the Sutton is showing them of Moshe's bier and saying, look, it means that Moshe has passed away. And therefore we need another intermediary between us and Hashem, which is why they asked for the Eagle. Okay. Gemara continues. One of the Chachamim asked Rav Kahana, "Mishmi aloch my Har Sinai? Have you heard anything about why the mountain is called Har Sinai?" And now, okay, you know, you could say very simple. In other words, it's called Har Sinai because that was its name. But Maharsho explains, in other words, because the Gemara is going to explain soon, at least according to one opinion, that the main name of the mountain is Choriv. In fact, we find the very first time it's mentioned in the Torah, it calls it Choriv. When's the first time? In Parshas Shemos, when Moshe is grazing Yisra's sheep, and he goes Achar HaMidbar, beyond the desert, and he comes to Har HaLikim Choriva. So therefore, so we see the basic name of the place is Choriv. So the question is, why is it better known as Har Sinai? Omalei, so Rav Kahana answers, how Shinasabai Nisim Yisrael. It's called Har Sinai because the letters Sinai, you can rearrange to spell Nes. And it means because it's the mountain where Nisim were done for the Jewish people. For example, we had before about how the Jewish people were revived each time after the Neshamas flew away during the Aseret Dibros. So it's called because of that. So the Ahumer Rabbanan says, how Nisai, mi boile. In that case, it shouldn't be called how Sinai. It should be called how Nisai. Why flip around the letters unnecessarily? Ella, okay, so Rav Kahana says, how Shinasabi Simon Tov Yisrael. In that case, you can say it's called that because It's the mountain where good simonim were made for the Jewish people. The fact that they received the Torah, that they were told they were going to be mamlachas koinim begoy kodesh. He says in that case, how simonai miboile. In that case, where's the mem? It should be called how simonai because they have the mem is in the word simon. Omalei, so Rav Kahana finally tells the Sahumi Rabbanan, my time alo shchichas kamed rapop of Rahuna Breda of Yeshua. Why don't you go often to be in front of, to learn by rapop and Rahuna Breda of Yeshua, dema'aini ba'agadta, because they delve into Agadta. They teach, you know, to put it in contemporary terms, they teach Ein Yaakov, and therefore you'll learn a lot from them about Agadta. You should know that they teach that Rav Chista and Rava or Rava Brei de Rav Huna both explain the reason why it's called Har Sinai, my Har Sinai, how she yorda sina lo'ovdi kechavim olam. It's the mountain that hatred came down to the nations on it. So that can mean two possibilities. Rashi says it means that Hashem hates the Goyim for the fact that they didn't receive the Torah. Hashem offered each nation the Torah, and all of them turned it down. So therefore, Hashem is upset with them for that and hates them for that, and for that reason, the mountain is called Har Sinai. A different explanation, Yaakov brings it, the Rambam brings it in Igeres Teimon, that another meaning of it is because of what happened at Har Sinai is why the Goyim hate us. You have throughout history, the Goyim have all kinds of different excuses for anti-Semitism. One time it's because we're too rich, and another time it's because we're too poor, and another time it's because we're anti-social, and another time because we're too social, v'chola v'chola. But it all goes back basically because they're jealous of the fact that we receive the Torah, even though they turned it down. But after all, they realize that they realize that we have such an advantage because of it, and therefore they hate us for it. Now, the Rambam makes that point, particularly in the Geras Teman. He's writing to the Jewish community in Yemen. They were having a whole bunch of problems with the Goyish rulers and a false Mashiach and a Mesis who's trying to convince them to become Muslims and so forth. So the Rambam gives them an overview of why it is that we Jewish people have to go through what we do in Golos. And he mentions in order to be Mechazik them, and he mentions this point. Anyway, so that's why it's called House Sinai. In fact, this also fits with what Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina says, that desert where the Torah was given actually has five different names. It's called Midbar Tzin, and we're going to explain one at a time what each of the names signifies. Tosfos actually is bothered by the fact, Tosfos discusses at some length, that it seems from the Pesukim that those are actually different areas, that some are south of Eretz Yisrael, some are east, and so on and so forth. So how is the Gemara assuming that it's all one? How is the Gemara assuming that it's all one desert? So Tosfos says, okay, maybe it is. It's one big desert that has various subparts in it. Marshaw explains, so still, Marshaw, still, though, Tosfos is bothered by particularly, fine, most of them you can explain, Midbar Sin, Midbar Paran, Midbar Kodesh, or whatever, all of those, it seems from the Pesukim, are south of Eretz Yisrael, so you can say, fine, there are areas in that big, gigantic desert in what's now the Sinai Peninsula, which is, where part of it is now in that southern triangle of Eretz of Israel, where you have the different parts of it go by different names. Midbar Kedemos, it seems from the Pesukim, is actually east of Eretz Yisrael, near Moab. So how does that fit with the Gemara is going to mention that as one of them. So Tosfos is bothered by how is that one of them. So Marsha explains, as we'll go through, and explains that it all fits. So the first one is Midbar Tzin. It's called that Shintstavu Yisrael Olav, because the Jewish people were commanded mitzvahs in it. The word sin is a little bit similar to the word siva. You find in particular a lot of times in Shoshim and Lashon Kodesh that a yud and a vav are interchangeable. So therefore tzin can be related to tziva. So the vote is, in other words, Marsha points out, now you have, when you get down to it, according to one opinion anyway, different mitzvahs were given in different places. You have the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, which actually brings at the beginning of this week's parasha, that all the mitzvahs, all the details of them were given at House Sinai. That's he understands, that's why it says that we learn a binyan av from Shmita to all the other mitzvahs. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel says in the Gemara that no, the mitzvahs, some mitzvahs were given in at House Sinai, and others in Oyel Moed, and others in Iris Moyav, and so forth. So following that opinion, then we're saying, so Midbar Tzin is called that. There are mitzvahs that the Jewish people were given at House Sinai. So therefore, though, in token of those, one part of that desert is called Midbar Tzin. Then you have Midbar Kodesh, Sheniskadshu Yisrael Olav. That would be, it's called that because the Jewish people became holy in it. So Marsha says that would be the mitzvahs that they were given from Oyel Moed, which is the place of Kedusha, the center of Kedusha for the Jewish people. The third one is Midbar Kedemos. That you have is mentioned in one place when Moshe says that he sent a message from Midbar Kedemos to Sichon to ask for permission to pass through his land. This is the one that Tosfos is bothered by. This one seems to be very far away from the other ones. But Marsha says this would refer to the mitzvahs that they were given in Arvis Maya, which is in that area of the world. Shenitna Keduma Olav, it's called that because the primordial Torah was given on it. The Torah, which existed even before the world, Apayim Shana Kodem Eternal Olam, was given in that desert. So here, Marsha says that's what it means. In other words, we mean that these mitzvahs were already given at Har Sinai, and now they're being repeated in Aris Moab, so they're Keduma, they already existed for long before that. Then it's called Midbar Paran also, Shaparu Varavu, all of Israel, because the Jewish people were fruitful and multiplied in it. So Rashi says that what happened was each were now like this. You have before Matan Torah, as we've learned in great detail earlier, they were told to separate from their spouses for 3 days. After that, though, Hashem tells them Shuvu lachem la'aleichem, return to your tents, which means that you can resume normal family life. And Rashi brings that each one, his wife became pregnant with a boy. Although Rashi says, I don't know where there's a remez for that. Marsha says the remez would be because and he says shuvu lochem la'olechem, lochem suggests for your hana, you're going to benefit from this, and that is that you're going to have boys. A couple of Ben Yehoyada and some others talk about so what happened with Tzlafchon? How comes it that he had only girls? And then Ben Yehoyada gives an answer. Maybe it was Taka only that one night that they had the special segula. After that, anybody who missed that night for whatever reason, such as because his wife was nidda or whatever, then he missed that opportunity, and then they might not end up having boys. He says also, I mean, look, you know, obviously Hashem made it happen that way so that these Bnei Tzlafchon were such tzidkanius, should be able to get their father's inheritance and should be able to have a parasha and the Torah added because of them and so forth. Anyway, so that's the Jewish people now had Pruvu because of that. And it's for the fifth name is Midbar Sinai, Shiyoda Sina La'ubdikachavim Olav, because again, hatred came down to the Goyim because of it, either according to Rashi, that Hashem hates them for not receiving the Torah, or according to the Rambam, that they hate us because we received the Torah and they didn't. Or Mashmoi, Chodov Shmoi, and what's the actual name of the place is Chodov. So in other words, that's what Marashah says. We're not saying that we don't. So in other words, what we mean is altogether it has six names. What we mean is there's the essential name of the place, the actual name of the place, as you would find on a map or whatever, is Chodev. But then it has five additional names in the Torah to hint at these five aspects of the giving of the Torah. But the Gemara points out this disagrees with how Rabba Bohu. The Om Rabba Bohu, Har Sinai Shmoi. Rabba Bohu learns Fakir. The basic name of the place is Har Sinai. So why is it called Har Chorev? Because destruction came down for the Goyim because of that, meaning in other words, Hashem, again, because they refused to accept the Torah, therefore eventually they're fated to be destroyed, unlike the Jewish people will last forever. According to Rabbi Bo, by the way, why is it called Sinai? Basically would be, Meforshim explained, because of the snare bushes that grow there. And there's the well-known thing, by the way, that they have. There's different opinions. Everybody has different understandings of where exactly how Sinai is. You know, you have there's the well-known one in southern Sinai that's identified as it. There's a whole bunch of other mountains throughout the Sinai Peninsula and even in Saudi Arabia that various people have claimed might be how Sinai. That particular one, it's well-known. The rocks from there have little images of snares, of thorn bushes embedded throughout the rock, concretions inside the rock. And even if you break open the rock on the fracture, you'll find more of them inside. Many years ago, I had a Rebbe in school, for example, who brought to class an example of such a rock, and you can see all over it there is that. So that suggests that mountain that those come from may indeed be the real Har Sinai, and it's called that because of the snare. But again, nobody is really sure whether that's the one. Okay. The Mishnah had gone on to say, another one of these asmachtas that we had in the Mishnah, where we were taking a pasuk and learning a hint to a din in it. So we said, Mishnah had said, "Minayin shekoshrin loshen shel zahuris b'rosh sorin amishtaleach." How do we know that we tie a ribbon of red wool, of crimson wool, onto the head of the sorin la'azazel, and you have the whole thing where it would turn white if the Jewish people's averus were forgiven. So why Shanema? Because the pasuk says, even if your averus will be like scarlet, they'll turn white as snow. So when the Jewish people were doing what they were supposed to, then Taka, they would see a simon that strip would Taka turn white. So the Gemara asks, Kashonim, why is it saying Kashonim with the plural? It should say Kashoni. As you have the Rashi explains the pasuk continues kasheleg yalbinu, doesn't say kashlogim in the plural, so why is shonim in the plural? And in fact, the usual name for that die is telas shoni. So why here shonim with a mem? So Amar Rabbi Yitzchok, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, means Hashem is telling the Jewish people, Im yir chateichem kashonim halobim, even if you are averus are going to be like these years, shesdureis uvois misheshes mebereshes vad achshav, the years that are going in order from Maisa Bereshis until now. So in other words, you have a huge volume of averus. And Marashah says we can't just mean two years because then there's no real chiddush in it. So what we mean is even if you have averus like it seems they've been stretching back all the way to the beginning of the world, nevertheless kasheleg yalbinu, they can still become white as snow. The Maharal makes a point that after all, even no matter how you also have this in one of the sichas for Project Lakota Sichas this week, no matter how low a yid falls, after all, avera is not part of his essence. So therefore, Hashem is saying, even if you've been doing Averis for a long time, it's like years and years worth of Averis, nevertheless, Kashalag Yabinu, it still can be wiped off relatively easily, because, and Hashem can forgive it, because it's not part of the essential, it's not part of the essence of what a Yid is. It's only something that was added on later, and therefore it can be removed. So the Gemara says, in this connection, Darash Rava, my dichtiv v'chu navni v'cha yomer Hashem, the first half of that pasuk is Hashem says, come now and let's debate, says Hashem. So what do you mean, l'chuna, boyu nami boyu, what do you mean, go now and let us debate? It should say, come now. And yomer Hashem, what do you mean Hashem will say, as though we're talking about something that Hashem will say in the future, Omer Hashem Yibor, that should say Hashem says. The Navi is telling the Jewish people, on the face of it, he's telling them, come now, Hashem is saying, come now, let's argue this out and see whether you're thinking that things are hopeless and you can't do tshuva, and I'll show you you can. So therefore, it should say Hashem has said that, come, let's argue. And instead it says, go, and Hashem is saying, will say. So what is that? Means the osid lover, Amalahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Israel, means in the future, Hashem is going to go Hashem is going to say to the Jewish people, L'chuna Eitzel Aviseichem, go now to your fathers, to your ancestors, to your Avis, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, V'yechichu Eschem, and they will give you Musar, and they will tell you off for what you did wrong. So that's L'chuna V'nivacha Yoymer Hashem. Hashem will say, go now, meaning not come to me, go to the Ovis, v'nivacha, and we will have a debate, and the Ovis will tell you off for what you did. But the Yomru Lefanav, but the Jewish people say to Hashem, Ribbono Shel'olam, Eitzel Mineilach, which one of the Ovis do you want us to go to? Which one is going to have Rachmanus on us? In other words, Marsha explains the vote is like this. Hashem judges people much more leniently than any boss of a dumb does. Even the greatest boss of a dumb, even the others who have tremendous rachmanus on their children, nevertheless, they still judge people the way that a human being does. So there's a certain limit to their rachman. Whereas Hashem's is infinite. And in particular, you have the idea that the Gemara mentions in Rosh Hashanah, you have the tzaddikim, the beinim, you have the tzaddikim, the shoyim, and the beinim. And the beinim, the Gemara mentions over there, they may have to go, they should have to go into Gehenna, but then Hashem, the rav chesed, Hashem shows abundant chesed, mata klapi chesed, that Hashem, so to speak, tilts the scale towards chesed, which is something that even a boss of a dumb doesn't do. So therefore, so Hashem is saying to them, you go to the obis and they'll tell you off for the fact that you're beinim in the sense that you have half mitzvahs, half averus, and they're saying that, but even if we go to the obis, they're not going to have such rachmanos on us, they're going to judge us more strictly than you do. So instead, they're going to say, after they go through how we see that the obis didn't have such rachmanos, we want to depend on your judgment, Hashem. So should we go to Avram? Shamartala Yodaya Teda. You told Hashem you should know that your children are going to be in Golus, and not just Golus Mitzrayim, but future Golias as well. V'loy Bikash Rachman Malenu, and in Davin for Rachmanus on us, which Marsha says, the vote is, in other words, that after all, it is true that the Golus was Nigzer because of one thing that Avraham did wrong. He said, Bama Eda. He said, well, how will I know that my children will inherit Eretz Yisrael? And for that, Hashem tells him, Yodaya Teda. But he didn't think to ask that Hashem should use his midas tuvcha and that Hashem should use that extra midah of goodness and overlook that one and set aside that one flaw and not cause us to be in golos. So therefore, we can't rely on him that now either when we go to him with our half averus, half mitzvahs, that he's going to be any more merciful on us. Should we go to Yitzchok? Sheberachas Esav. He gave Esav a bracha. V'hoya kasher torid. He says to Esav, when you have reason to complain, when Yaakov and his descendants are not doing what they're supposed to in Torah and mitzvahs, then you'll throw off their yoke. And again, b'lebikash rachim malenu. Again, Yitzchok didn't ask, well, Hashem, give the Jewish people a break and don't judge them so strictly right away as soon as Esav has reason to complain. Should we go Eitzel Yaakov? I will go down with you to Mitzrayim. And Rashi adds, when the pasuk continues, Hashem says, I will bring you up. Also bringing up, that's a remez to all the other Goliaths, because the Gam includes the rest of the Goliaths. And again, and he didn't daven for Rachmanus for us, that we shouldn't have to go through future Goliaths. So how can we rely on the others to have Rachmanus on us when we're laid down with half mitzvah, with half of Eitz? So Eitzel Minelach Achshav. So who should we go to now? Yoimon Hashem. So Hashem should say, in other words, we're saying, let Hashem say what we've done wrong, because Hashem will treat us with more rachmim even than the obvious will. Because Hashem, again, is matik klapei chesed. Hashem will tilt the scale towards the side of good so that we're not actually half averus. So now Hashem says to them, since you've shown that you rely on me, that you're recognizing that Hashem's chesed is greater than anybody else's, then fine, I will reciprocate and act with that degree of chesed. As he continues, that even if your averus are like scarlet, red like scarlet, or like we said, tons of averus, like as if there were years of them going on, nevertheless, kashalig yalbinu, they'll become white as snow, because you showed that you're not just relying on bas v'dam, that you realize you need Hashem's chesed to get you through this. So therefore, I'll reciprocate with that exact chesed.
Also, it could be red from the Averis called blood red.
Yeah, that's why red is used as a metaphor for Averis. That's what we're saying. They tied the red ribbon to the head of the Sarid Mashalayach and it would turn white. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula, Tes Zayin Ir. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, this coming Shabbos is Pirkei Avos, that Golus comes to the world because of Avodah Zorah, Gilu Arayis, Shrichus Damim, and because of failure to keep Shemitah, which you have in this week's parasha actually as well. So that I've talked about, you see in this statement how you really have stressed how impossible Golus should really be according to the Metzius of the world. That only when people are being over on the most serious Averis in the Torah, only then Golus Bala Olam. Really, I mean, you consider the Mishnah is mentioning four Averis, implying that your people could conceivably be violating 609 out of the 613 mitzvahs, and still there's no room for Golus. Only those four can cause it to happen. And the reason is because since it's Hashem's world, how could there possibly be a concept of Golus in it? So in other words, we see the point that Rebbe is making is like this. We think that Golus is the natural state we're in, but we should realize how unnatural Golus is and how so to speak, against the way that Hashem made the world to run it is. All right. That's what we're saying, because the Mishnah says, because of those four Averis, but the point that Rebbe is making is that absent those four Averis, there couldn't even possibly be room, according to Derech HaTeva, for Golus. Okay, continuing with Birkas HaRe'iyah, the various brachas that you say on things that you see. So for all of the following things, you say Oysa Mais Bereshis, for shooting stars, meteors, also comets, also earthquakes, also very strong storm winds, like tornadoes, and for lightning, each one of those, you say Oysa Mais Bereshis. The Alter Rebbe says that if you want, you could say Shekocho Grosim Ola Olam, and in fact, for some of them, the minhag is to say Shekocho Grosim Ola Olam instead. Meteors, you say only if you see them once every night, even if you see another meteor, and as far as comets, you only say the bracha if you haven't seen it, if then you don't see it for 30 days, and then you see it again, then you'd say the bracha again. At one point, by the way, a while back, Rabbi Elzeva mentioned that with lightning, you would say the bracha on lightning only if you see the actual bolt of lightning, not just if you see the flash in the sky. So you'd have to actually see the zigzag, apparently.
You have to look at the sky.
Apparently, if you just see the flash, then Rabbi Elzeva was once saying not necessarily would you make the bracha. You were once telling me that if you want to see the flash of lightning, like between the buildings or whatever, you wouldn't say the bracha on it, only if you see the actual zigzag of the lightning in the sky, yeah. Something to know. I mean, something that I didn't know about until then.
So,